The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Well, it's the playoffs. The Chiefs are still in it, which means we are fortunate enough to be joined by Randy Cesarelli of the Ringer 4A, and I count 10 times on the show with us. So, Randy, happy 10-episode anniversary with us. How are you doing, and do you have any stuff for us to start hyping for you yet?
So 10 times I've been on the show. That's remarkable when you consider that almost every time I'm on, it's because the Chiefs are about to play a playoff game. Or just played a playoff game. If you had this podcast starting in like 1972 and ended in like 2017, we wouldn't have done that many more. So,
right.
So yes, it's you know, it's a tradition now. It's a tradition. I have to do this, and I enjoy it. It's a tradition for me to go skiing in the heart of Broncos country in Vail, middle of January. And it's become a tradition apparently to watch the Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills in a very stressful playoff game while I'm there. I watched all three of them from the same place with the same friends, good friends, this kind of friends who will offer you condolences when Josh Allen scores the go-ahead touchdown with 13 seconds left. You know, good times were had by all. But this time not quite as stressful, but a lot more stressful than it probably should have been.
Yeah, certainly. We will we'll get into that. I wanted to start with something that I saw that somebody famous bit from one of your tweets. Just want to see what you think about the Mahomes 16 game stat line versus the last 10 non-Mahomes MVPs that you tweeted out. And then the very within 24 hours, Nick Wright, who we love, does great job, does really, really good work on First Things First, literally had the graphic up, no attribution. I was miffed for you. Did you see that?
Do
you
have maybe it's a coincidence. They used a different number of games. I've talked to Nick on his radio show many years back. I have a lot of respect for him, and obviously he's the Chiefs hype man on TV that I try to be in print from time to time. So
that's good.
So, you know, I appreciate his work. I don't know if he got that idea from me or not, but it was something I've been sitting on for a while. I didn't really run the numbers, but it was, you know, going into this game, I knew this is his 16th playoff game, and I still consider 16 to be a full season.
Yeah.
And just knowing that if we want, he'd be 13-3, which is like a tremendous regular season record for any quarterback. So when the game was done, I pulled up the spreadsheet because I wasn't going to sleep anytime soon, I can tell you that. and ran the numbers, and it was just as glorious as I thought. I mean, you may have the stats right in front of you.
I do. But, you want me to read them?
Yes. Well, let me tell you what it is. Like, okay. So we're talking about the last 10, and I made it clear, non-Mahomes MVPs, because, of course, Mahomes' MVP seasons were particularly spectacular, and that that might have biased the numbers. But the last 10 quarterbacks, I think Adrian Peterson actually won an MVP award in there. And these are not cheapies. We're talking about 4 Aaron Rodgers seasons, 2 Tom Brady's, a Peyton Manning, Lamar Jackson, and Cam Newton being the running guys on the list, and then the random one from Matt Ryan. That's the most random one on the list, I think. We're still talking about, like, you know, and these are of course their best seasons, and their stats are basically indistinguishable from what Patrick Mahomes has done in the playoffs. They averaged 13.1 wins and 2.7 losses. He's 13-3. Their completion percentage, 67.1%. His is 66.8%.
Yep.
They averaged 4,330 yards in their MVP season. He has 4,561 yards in the playoffs. 40 touchdowns for them, 38 for him. six and a half interceptions for them, seven for him. I didn't include this. They got sacked 29 times for 188 yards. He's been sacked 30 times for 210 yards. They had 276 rushing yards and three rushing TDs. He had 443 rushing yards and five TDs. So yeah, if you had to pick one year versus the other, it's six or half, you know, six of one or half dozen of another. I don't think you'll get a consensus. He's basically performed like a regular season MVP in 16 playoff games against playoff defenses with all the pressure in the world. That is why. Oh yeah, we'll get into the Ravens game coming up, but that is why I don't care if we're playing the Monstars from Space Jam. I have, you know, faith that when all the pressure is on both sides, Patrick Mahomes is in my corner.
What's crazy about that too, also, is that not only are they playoff teams in those 16 games, but he's advanced so far every time, obviously setting the record for most consecutive postseasons with two plus wins, mm-hmm. that they're not just wild card teams. These are AFC championships and Super Bowls. And I mean, you know, the best of the best of the best every single year. And performing like an MVP in that sample size is, I mean, completely mind-blowing.
It's unheard of. And let's not forget the weather here either, guys. I mean, yes. These games are all being played in January and February. He doesn't play in a dome. A lot of the teams in the AFC. I would say
almost all of them are outdoors because almost all of them are outdoors.
Right, exactly. With the exception of the Super Bowls and the game that he just played in Buffalo, they're all cold weather games at Arrowhead in January. So pretty amazing. I wanted to build off of that, Randy. This is not quite as technical and as deep as yours, but I did want to show a little love to our guy Travis Kelce. This actually was brought to my attention by one of our listeners.
I saw that one as well. Yeah, this is a great this is a great stat. I wish I'm so mad at myself for not picking up on that one. That
was sure. I mean, you should have added this to it, but Caveman Jesus, one of our listeners, brought this to our attention. Travis Kelce in 16 playoff games in the Mahomes era. So this does include some cameos by Chad Henne.
Sure. And basically in the 16 games that Patrick Mahomes started in the
correct. Post. 1,400 yards, 17 touchdowns. And I compared this not to MVPs because tight ends are not wearing the MVPs, but do you know what the single season records for tight ends in receiving touchdowns and receiving yards are respectively?
I'm assuming it's Gronk's sophomore year is, I think, the gold standard. When you talk about tight ends, you know, the best career, Travis Kelce, the best peak, the best individual season, I think you have to go with Gronkowski.
That's correct. And that is the record single season tight end touchdown record, 17 receiving touchdowns by Gronk in 2011. So tied that 17 in 16 games. That's exactly the same for Kelce. Again, in the playoffs, not, mm-hmm. you know, against mm-hmm. these patsies in the AFC East that Gronk was getting touchdowns thrown to, you know, dunking up two scores in the fourth quarter, you know.
I mean, Travis Kelce in the 16 games of the Patrick Mahomes era, he scored a touchdown in 12 of those games, like at least one. Like the consistency is absurd.
Yeah.
And then the single season receiving yards record for a tight end is Travis Kelce's. It's 1,416 yards in 2020. So, I mean, he's only 16 yards off of his own single season, regular season tight end record all time pace in the playoffs. I mean, we're talking 16 playoff games. He has the same number of touchdowns as the single season record, and he's 16 yards off of the single season record for receiving yards, which he set in the playoffs. That's bananas. That's almost crazier than the Mahomes numbers. I mean, it's absurd.
I mean, having, you know, two all-time GOATs, arguable all-time GOATs at the positions who both play at a better level against postseason competition and postseason weather. I think we have a pretty good handle on why the Chiefs are, you know, 13-3 in their last six postseasons. And like you said, you know, winning two playoff games at least in five consecutive years. They had done that once in my lifetime before 2019. They had won before 2018. They had won what, four playoff games in like 40 years, and they've done at least two. That's the thing. It's like sitting down for a playoff game with the expectation of winning now. It's like, and winning is I don't want the fact that winning is normal in the postseason. I don't want that feeling to become normal.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think the 40 years of scars that I suffered prior to 2018, I think I've overcome them. Like, I know we can lose. Well, obviously we have lost in that span, but I don't, I know I don't go into a game expecting to lose. I don't, even when things are going wrong, and God knows there were certainly moments in the Bills game where, you know, 5 years ago, it'd be like, oh, here we go. I know exactly how this ends, you know, like, you know, whether it's the butt fumble with Andrew Luck, or the catch my own pass from Marcus Mariota, or missed field goals from everybody from the kicker who should not be named to Pete Stojanovic to Morton Anderson to Lawrence Tynes. Like now when something just unforgivable, like what Mecole Hardman did, happens, I'm angry. I'm, you know, scared, but I'm not despondent. I'm not, resigned to losing. There's still that part of me that says, they'll find a way to make this worse. And it's interesting this year because, of course, in the past, we'll find a way to make this work because the offense will come through. Now it's like, we'll find a way to make it work because our defense will hold.
Yes.
That's exactly what happened. We
need the offense to scratch across a couple more because the defense is going to hold it down. It's funny, you know, thinking about a team like San Francisco that just broke their streak of, like, trailing by five or more entering the fourth quarter. They were.
I saw that stat in the middle of the fourth quarter. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Like, is that, how is that possible? How is a team that hadn't been to the
come
Super
back
Bowl?
In, right. Right. And then,
you know, Aaron Rodgers had a stat like that too.
He did.
A year or two ago, and he broke a, like, a 20 something game streak.
Yeah.
Of not having come back in the fourth quarter. It's
and
insane.
You know, that
it's crazy.
Seems kind of, I mean, it's crazy to us as Chiefs fans, but that does seem like it's kind of the expectation that you shouldn't be able to come back all the time. And yet we've obviously seen this insane playoff stretch, which has included some of the greatest comebacks in franchise history, if not all of them in this
stretch.
Well, I
mean, we take for granted things that no one should ever take for granted, which is the idea that you can come back in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. Like, I'll give credit to Nick Wright. They had another great stat on their Monday show that I had not picked up on, which was in playoff games where Patrick Mahomes had trailed by 7 points. We're all familiar with the 10-point deficit, which is a combined regular season postseason stat. But when down by seven or more points at any point in a playoff game, specifically playoff game, Patrick Mahomes is 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Every other playoff team, I think since Patrick Mahomes, I think they start this in 2018.
Since 2018, that's correct.
I believe, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I believe the winning percentage was 171.
You almost got it. 178. They are 13-60.
13-8-2. Tom Brady is, I think, 8-9 or 9. He's like
Brady's
just under
10-11.
10-11, right? One game under
5-6. Peyton 3-9. Mahomes 8-2.
The established GOAT is like almost 500, and that's amazing. I mean, when losing, like, we're you know, biasing the sample by saying you have to be losing. Like, it's not like, oh, when you have a certain number of interceptions or number of yards, you're actually looking at the score. Like, that is what determines who wins and loses. The score, you're down a touchdown. To be 500 or close to it in that situation is remarkable. And again, in the postseason, 8-2. 8-2. It's just absurd. And I think it's not that I take for granted that Patrick Mahomes can do it. The mistake I think we make is we take for granted that it's easy to do that. Like when I saw that stat that the 49ers had literally not done that in like the last 21 games, I was honestly shocked. And I shouldn't be shocked because it's hard to come back in the fourth quarter. But like Patrick Mahomes has set a standard so high, he has adjusted my comprehension of how easy it is to come back to the point where I look at, you live in the penthouse for so long that you walk the streets and you see somebody, you know, taking the bus, and you're like, they have buses? Like, they don't have their own private jet? Like, what's going on here? Like, that's how it feels after 6 years of this, that, you know, normalcy, that, like, mediocrity, and I don't mean that as an insult, just averageness is incomprehensible to us now.
Yeah.
Real quick, before we jump into that Bills game, does that 8-2, does that include the Patriots AFC Championship game loss? Because
I believe does. That's the one.
They trailed by 14 in that game.
Well, right, the point that I'm making there is he tied the game.
Right, exactly. He never got the ball
and
back.
And then lost the point flip. Sure.
Yeah, like, no, think about it.
That one doesn't even really count.
Well, the third, I mean, there's only lost three, period, right?
Right, so right,
the,
right.
The third, the only game he didn't, I believe, is the Bengals game. The Bengals which is game, always, right. Which is always the exception, right. Which is always the anomaly.
Yes.
Right.
It's that game and then obviously the Super Bowl where, you know, they never didn't trail by more than seven. Right. So.
Yep. It's wild. All right, Randy, we're going to let you pick the next narrative that we're going to talk about the Bills. It's either going to be the first road playoff game, the Chiefs owning the Bills being cursed, Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes, Taylor Swift ruining football, or mystery door number six, your choice.
I mean, let's quickly dispense with the Taylor Swift. I mean, it's funny because, you know, both visually and metaphorically, Taylor Swift was obscured in this game by Jason Kelce.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, like if you even bring up like that Taylor somehow was a distraction in this game, you're outing yourself because like, right. Taylor was in the background. All I saw, like if Taylor Swift acted in any way remotely, like how Jason Kelce, like as much a look at me, obviously not topless, that would have created a sensation, but like just had brought as much spotlight on herself celebrating. And, you know, this is a man deliriously happy for his brother scoring a touchdown in the playoff game. Like, you know, that what he did was a completely natural reaction. If Taylor Swift had done that, it would have caused the stadium to implode upon itself. You know, I believe, you know, Skip Bayless would have been raptured probably by this point. So she did nothing. Like she didn't even do anything. So, like, if we're going to talk about anything, it'd just be that, you know, Jason Kelce was having the time of his life. And yeah, I will say this, that whatever suite Taylor Swift is in at any Chiefs game is immediately like the center of the universe now.
Yes.
Right? It seems like the coolest place in the world. If they sold tickets, it would like the highest priced tickets in the history of mankind would be to, you know, be for, like the, for one ticket. Open spot in the booth, whatever suite that they're in, because everybody there, it's just random celebrities. You know, she does have that gravitational pull that she just pulls celebrities into her orbit in a cool way, so you never know who's going to be there. You know, Blake Lively will probably be there. It's like not even a big deal anymore. And it's another thing that's like we just take for granted that, oh, like world-class celebrities are going to be rooting for the Chiefs at suite. Even that wasn't happening a year ago.
Right.
But now we have, you know, oh, there's a supermodel. Cara, what's her name? Cara Delevingne? I don't know how to say her name. But, you know, there was the Jets game where you're like just Hugh Jackman and just like random
Ryan
people.
Ryan Reynolds.
They're the Lakers. They're the Showtime Lakers. They've kind of always been the Showtime Lakers on the field, at least offensively. Yeah. This year, ironically, they're for the first time, they're not really the Showtime Lakers offensively, but they're the Showtime Lakers in terms of, you know, the people who are there. Like, if Jack Nicholson shows up in the suite, I will not be surprised. So let's dispense with that. But what I think we should talk about is, you know, the Bills, the you talk about the curse part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you two are old enough to remember Scott Norwood.
I've seen it. I was seven.
But you weren't
the
there
time.
Live. No. Seven. Okay, right. You might have been right on the fringe.
Yep.
It is. I do truly feel bad for Bills fans. Like, I, you know, they are. We've been in the dungeon with them, right? Like we were paroled about 5-6 years ago, but like, you know, Bills, Vikings, Lions, who are making their own run here. Chargers. The Browns, like screw the Chargers. I don't know. but you know, the Browns, those are teams, you know, I probably put the Chargers in their level. Like certainly relative to the Broncos and Raiders, yes, the Chargers get a bit of a pass. But like, you know, I feel sympathy for those fans, and it's real sympathy because we've been there. We were there a long time. I don't know why we were chosen to be paroled and they were not, but we remember the times with them in prison, and I do feel bad for them. But
in the pit, we were in the pit together.
We were in the
they're still in their own pit.
They jumped into their pit and they didn't come out this time. But it was really, it says something that even when he missed a kick, and I will say, I don't know how you guys felt, but like I watched, you know, the games the week before, and in that Steelers game, you know, the Bills won comfortably, but he had one blocked kick and then one kick he shanked. And
yes,
I remember thinking, I'm like, you know, it's like this, I like having Harrison Butker on my side, and I'm, I like the fact that Tyler Bass is on their side. Like, I just, you know, it was kind of the thing, you put a pin in it and you're like, well, if this game comes down to the kickers, That's another thing that, as a Chiefs fan, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I feel
yeah
more confident right. on my side than the other side.
Totally. Was it you who tweeted that he was a ticking time bomb? I think I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, I felt it all along. It was yeah. just, you know, if this game came, and then when we saw how windy it was like, okay. Like, at first, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, how's that going to affect the passes, et cetera. But then I thought about from the kicking side, I'm like, man, Tyler Bass in the wind after last week. This, you know, so when he lined up, I wouldn't say I predicted it, but I was like very much, you know, comfortable with the fact that they had to take a mid-range field goal attempt in that weather, yep. knowing worst case scenario, it's a minute and a half left and Patrick Mahomes with the ball and two timeouts. Like there weren't a lot of bad scenarios there, short of, you know, going for it on fourth down, which they, you know, fourth and nine, they weren't going to do. So, but it just, it's fun because in the moment, you know, he missed it and it just didn't occur to me. Oh my God, it's wide right. Like it did yes. that part did. Yes. It's been so long. It's been 35 years, 34 years, 34 years since Scott Norwood, which is a 49 yard kick. This was a 44 yard kick mm-hmm. and 49 back then was like 55 today. Like, right. you know, guys mm-hmm. missed, you know, you 49 was like maybe a 60-40 proposition. Like he was favored to make it, but not by much. 44, that's, you know, not, it's not a gimme, but that's, I don't know, at least an 80-85%.
Made yeah, it's a high probability play in the modern NFL for sure.
And fact checking is saying 47 on the wide right on Norwood.
Oh, 47, I take about 47.
Certainly,
okay.
I mean, even though it was in a, you know, Super Bowl and you're down, so it's either a win or lose kick. Like the circumstances there, obviously, is
right
as
because they were kicking for the lead.
Exactly, it was, yeah. it, and with no time left. I mean, it was a win or lose kick, right, but right. still. You know, you said that the Bills weren't going to go for it on fourth and nine. Do you think that, I know hindsight's 20/20, and I know he missed the kick, but even if he had made the kick with the way that the Chiefs are moving the ball, right. the chances of them going down, and like my heart feels like it's 100. It's certainly extremely high that Harrison Butker is going to go hit a field goal and the right. Chiefs are going to win that. Looking back on it, I mean, going for it on fourth and nine doesn't seem like that crazy of a proposition.
The way it? I always judge whether or not, you know, an opposing team should, you know, should what the quote unquote analytics. The analytics in my head will tell you if you go for it and I'm mad, like I'm worried more, then you should go for it as the opposing team, right? And you know, yeah. certainly in the Patrick Mahomes era, we have seen teams go for it so much more, and it's yes. very annoying. Like not on kicks, but certainly on punts. Like how many times are you actually upset that the other team is punting? Like how many, you know, sort of right. like, you know, fourth and sure. 16, like when are you actually like, oh, they're going for it? Great. I feel so good.
Right. Right.
Never. And no. I will say right now, if they had gone for it on fourth and nine, I think I would have been terrified.
Yes. Sure.
Cause yes
especially watching them streak open in the middle of the end zone on the second down play. I mean, yes, I agree.
And I mean, it's partly because, okay. Yeah. Obviously if you go for it, you've got a chance to take the lead. But also because if you make it, not only are you in a good position to take lead, you're gonna drain the clock. Like
yeah,
right. the fear when that drive started. How much there was a ton of
eight
time.
Minutes, eight minutes. Yeah,
and
8 minutes.
And the friends I was sitting with early on were like, "Wow, they're gonna take this all the way down." And I'm like, "No, that's not possible."
Right.
And
that's then finally,
they got to midfield and was already like ticking under four. I'm like, "Oh my God, this is possible." That was what terrified. Now, obviously. Unless they got it under 13 seconds, there was always
right.
a chance. But,
right.
but still, I would much rather not have it come down to that.
No. Can you imagine if it did? Jeez. and, you know, Allen was criticized for not hitting Diggs underneath on the one that he missed into the end zone. That was a harder throw, but would have been a touchdown. He was open. Certainly, I don't think the decision to throw that deep ball was – I mean,
I think this is why video is good, right? This is why we've – at the time, it's like, oh, wow, you know, they should have gone underneath. But and you actually – break it all down. Mm-hmm. If he had gone to Diggs underneath,
five of the 10?
I mean, I don't know if he gets the first down. I think that there are linebackers right. in place, but it's certainly like third and two or whatever. I think you can make the argument, yes, it would have made sense because it would have, again, drained more time off the clock. Because even if he hits the shot to the end zone,
mm-hmm.
You know, okay, they're up before with, what, again, a minute and a half. I'm like...
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I'm okay with
it
that.
It's like right after the 2 minute warning. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been, you know, Chiefs would have been down four, which also, you know, I always think about like, would I rather be down four or three? because if I'm down three, obviously the field goal ties it. But if I'm down four, the coach is forced to go for the win.
Right.
Sometimes I like that. I like the aggressiveness that you have every fourth down in your bag from there on in. And I mean, who knows if the Bills would have been down four on that drive instead of settling for that field goal. They would have.
Well, it depends on how much time is on the clock. I mean, obviously, true. when it was 13 seconds.
Yes,
down
yes,
three, yes,
three
please.
There.
I'll take three.
Yeah,
I'll take
yeah
three.
Right.
That's
right,
fine.
Right.
But with a minute 40, I'd still prefer the point. I'd still prefer the option. But
yes.
But yeah, you don't want it to become a crutch. I do see that with coaches too many times, settling for three because they could live to fight another day. But I will say, like, since very, very early on in the Patrick Mahomes era, like their aggressiveness, like Andy Reid before, even with Alex Smith, if there's 30 seconds left in the half, he's taking a knee. And yeah. it was incredible to see the confidence even very early in Patrick's career that with 30 seconds left, they were taking, you know, one timeout, they were going to take a shot to get 30 yards to get that field goal before halftime. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't the issue to me. But on that play, you know, everything I know about that is Josh Allen was not his job was, if the first option was open, take the, throw. Yeah. It wasn't his job to even look at Stephon Diggs on that,
sure.
on that play.
Take the shot. Yeah.
What happened there was Chris Jones pushed their all-star left tackle into him at the very last moment and prevented him from getting the throw off. I didn't appreciate that fully at the time. But you watch it, and this is the thing: Chris Jones, no sacks in this game, and it's easy to forget. Like, that was such a huge part of the Chris Jones narrative for so long.
It was
zero playoff sacks.
That's right.
But he is still such a force. Like, when the game matters, you know, he's played well in the postseason and in the most crucial moments. He has always stepped up. I mean, this game he forced a fumble. We didn't recover because Jamari Connor didn't jump on the ball. Yeah. If he did, then the story would be, you know, Chris Jones caused a fumble, caused a turnover.
And Josh Allen's careless with the ball, which didn't become a narrative. Everyone's talking about how fantastic Josh Allen played, but obviously, if he's driving down there and fumbles the ball back to the Chiefs, that's just turnover-prone Josh Allen. So you're right. I mean, that was a big narrative.
I mean, and Josh Allen in this game, I mean, let's go back to the first half briefly here, because honestly, it was one of the few times all season where it felt like our defense was just sort of powerless to resist an opposing offense. The only game that really reminds me of that was the Packers loss, where they scored a season high 27. And, you know, I have to give the Bills some credit. Their game plan, I don't think the Chiefs expected their game plan to be so focused on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting 6-7 yards at a time, either by handing it off or by having just Josh Allen run with it. And I mean, they ate up an enormous amount of clock, which doesn't, you know, clock management and time of possession is highly overrated, unless you have a big lead. And obviously they didn't, but it was like they were chewing up so much clock that you knew the game was going to come down to fewer possessions than your average game. And the fewer possessions you have, obviously, the more critical every single one of them is. So it just kind of heightened the tension. But they put, you know, they scored 17 points before halftime. And I mean, Josh Allen was playing extremely well. It's funny because now everyone's like, gee, he only threw past the sticks like twice the whole game or whatever.
Yep.
But I'll tell you this: in the first half, I wasn't thinking, "Geez, he's not throwing the deep ball." No, I was thinking they're getting 5-6 yards at a time, but it's irresistible. You can score a touchdown on every drive if you're getting 4 or 5 yards every single play,
right?
And that's kind of what they were doing. So, as always, you know, all credit to Steve Spagnuolo, because second half they gave up 7 points. That's 7 games in a row. The Chiefs have not given up more than 7 points in the second half of a game. You know, they came out, they took the lead for their first drive. And then, look, get all credit to Josh Allen, because that touchdown that he did throw in the second half to Khalil Shakir, you know, the first touchdown that L'Jarius Sneed gave up all season.
Yeah, right. It was a dot.
I mean, they just took the lead, and it was like, you know, we're about to go into the fourth quarter. And I should have been angry at somebody. And I wasn't angry. I was just like, you just tip your cap. It was an incredible throw, and you know, mm-hmm. third and goal from like the 13.
Yeah,
just a dot. What do you do? I mean, just Josh Allen. There's so much of this. Oh, Josh Allen just doesn't have what it takes to win in the playoffs. There's questions about Josh. This is, you know, Josh Allen's narrative. No, Josh Allen is an amazing quarterback who just has the incredible misfortune of playing, you know, in the exact same era as Patrick LaVon Mahomes II. Like, that's all this is. Josh Allen, if in a world, in a universe where Patrick Mahomes does not exist, Josh Allen, you know, I would have a very strong case to be the best quarterback in football. It's, you know, after Mahomes, it's him or Lamar Jackson. We're facing them in back-to-back weeks. I mean, I don't think you can make a credible case for anybody outside of those two after Patrick Mahomes.
Well, let's talk about that, Randy, because obviously the defense stepped up in the second half, but there was a great graphic that was tweeted out from Bruno H. Mioto the other day that showed, it's just an infographic with Patrick Mahomes' EPA per play for every game of his career, and that included the playoffs. And the Bills game, and for reference, and we're going to circle back to this chart when we talk about the Ravens, Lamar's EPA per play for this season, and he's going to win his second MVP this year, is a 0.15 per EPA per play. So that's really good. That's like MVP level over a season good. Patrick Mahomes against the Bills in the AFC Championship game, 0.56 EPA per play. So roughly four times better than Lamar in his second MVP season. 13 seconds, 0.51 EPA per play. And then this past Sunday, 0.57 EPA per play, which would be, if you're counting, the Texans at 0.7 EPA per play.
The Texans was his best game.
That was his best playoff game.
This one, I think, was tied for second.
That's correct.
All you need to know is the 13 seconds game was Patrick Mahomes' worst performance
against the Bills.
The Bills.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just so that this week was tied with the Titans game in the AFC Championship game in the 2019 season for his second best playoff game. His other Bills game in the 2020 season, the AFC Championship game, that was tied with the Eagles for third or fourth best, however you want to do that. And then 13 seconds is right
six in the Super Bowl, by the way.
Right. Pretty good against an absolute That's juggernaut it. Of an Eagles yeah. team. And then 13 seconds is right behind that. So the Bills are up there with three of his top six best playoff games, all against the same team, all against the same superstar quarterback. I know they don't play each other, but I mean, like you said, you got to feel for Bills fans to run into three all-time great playoff performances from the same quarterback in 4 years.
Right. And again, I feel bad for Bills fans on some level, but I just want to push back against this narrative that Josh Allen somehow doesn't have what it takes. Like, the man scored a game winning. It's easy to forget about the 13 seconds and what that meant.
Right.
But I remember how I felt. Like, Josh Allen just threw a touchdown, you know, got the ball back with like a minute 15 or whatever, drove the length of the field and scored a game winning touchdown with 13 seconds left to knock out, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs and go to the AFC Championship game. He never touched the ball again. If you are going to let what happened after that, because Patrick Mahomes is on the other side, affect your perception of Josh Allen, then I don't really, I think you're more interested in, like, you know, clickbait or, you know, outrage farming than actual analysis. Josh Allen is a phenomenal quarterback. And, you know, I do hope that, you know, in whatever rare season the Chiefs are not Super Bowl, you know, bound, then that maybe that one of those years that, you know, they'll have their New Orleans Saints moment. They'll have their Drew Brees, you know, take them to the promised land one time moment. But I wanted to get back to the Tyler Bass thing because, you know, for so long, the narrative of the Chiefs was, you know, if the kickers got involved, it was a disaster for us. You know, I mean, I feel like we haven't suffered quite as much as certain franchises in the playoffs, but at least until this game, I mean, yeah, they have Scott Norwood, but that was really the one time the Bills had, you know, a playoff game decided by, you know, missing a field goal kick. Maybe there's some other playoff game that they've had in their history. I'm not.
I think you're correct.
But, you know, with the Chiefs, I mean, 5 years ago, before Patrick Mahomes' first playoff game, before the game against the Colts, I wrote an article for The Ringer. The headline was "The Untold Misery of the Chiefs' Postseason Kicking Wounds."
No,
because, you know, we focus on Lynn Elliott, and certainly that's, you know, obviously, that's fair. You know, you miss three field goals in a game where you're the number one seed and you lose by three points, you're going to be remembered. But it's not remotely the only one.
Yep.
And, you know, I had a chart in this in which I broke it down since 1971. Since, you know, because you really, this starts, it doesn't start with Linnea, it starts with Jan Stenerud.
Mm-hmm.
Hall of Fame kicker, Jan Stenerud, missing a field goal against the Dolphins on Christmas Day, the only double overtime game in NFL history. It was before even my time, but it's still, it was the last playoff game the Chiefs would have for 15 years. Like, everything spiraled out of control after that. But from that moment through when I wrote this, so through the 2018 season, or 2018 regular season, the Chiefs had tried 35 field goal kicks in the playoff and missed 14 of them.
14, what's, so 21 so they, out of 35?
Yeah, they made 60%. They missed 40% of their field goals.
Brutal.
Outrageous.
And here's the thing.
And playoff kicks aren't very important, are they?
And I broke it down. There were six of those kicks were 47 yards or more. So the Scott Norwood number, you said 47. Okay. So, and they were 3 of 6, which not great, but like, okay, yeah, those are the hardest.
Respectable.
Kicks.
Yep.
Kicks of 46 yards or less. They were 18 of 29.
Oh no.
And like the let's take out the gimme. So I actually between kicks of between 28 and 46 yards.
Yeah.
They made 9, missed 10.
What?
They missed more than half their field goal attempts on kicks of between 28 and 46 yards. But here's the thing. Like, and I mean, I could, you know, give you all of them. I mean, like I mentioned, like I remember Pete Stoyanovich. That was actually a longer field goal, I think, but that was in the 97 divisional round game against the Broncos, the 14-10 game where he made the field goal. They called a false start, I believe, moved it back 5 yards. He doinked it. So the Chiefs, instead of being down one, were down 4 on their final drive. They got to the 20-yard line where they could have kicked a game-winning field goal, instead had to go for it and didn't make it. Like, there's so many of these. More in the 38-31 game, the no-punt game against the Colts and Peyton Manning in 2003. Morton Anderson, Hall of Famer. Morton Anderson missed like a 30 yarder, I want to say, in that game. I mean, it's awful. But when I wrote this, one thing that it occurred to me is like, let me look and see how the opponents did against the Chiefs. Because when you think about, you know, if there's one event in a football game that you have as a team, you have like zero control over, it is. What does the opposing kicker do against you? I mean, obviously you can block it, but that's extremely rare. Very rare. Yep. Other than that, it is completely out of control. And actually, one of the it's a small but very significant marker for regression. Like when you are trying to evaluate a team, like let's say you want to know how do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars will do in 2024? One of the things you want to normalize is you look at the success of opposing kickers against him, because it's completely random. If opposing kickers nailed 98% of their field goal attempts or some ridiculous number, you can be completely certain that's going to regress the next year. We know there are certain things on the field, like fumble recoveries. Teams on average will recover half of all fumbles on either side. So
unless you're playing in the Bills this weekend.
well, you know, half of one is, you know, it's a coin flip. But the point is, if you recovered 78% of the fumbles in a season, you're probably going to regress the next year. But nothing regresses harder than what your opponents do when they're kicking field goals. It's just luck, right? Mm-hmm. In that same span where the Chiefs were 21 of 35, they tried 35 field goals, they missed 14. Their opponents tried 40 field goals in the playoffs. They made 35 of them. But it's more ridiculous because all 5 that they missed were on kicks of 47 yards or more. They tried 11. Sure. They were 6 of 11. And 6 of 11
is still good.
6 of 11 is not bad, especially because this includes games from the 80s and 90s. You know, but not only that, but of those 5 kicks, I'll give you the breakdown here. Yeah, all 5 came in games that their opponents won anyway.
Oh.
And in 4 of them, in that game, the opposing kicker kicked a game-winning field goal anyway. Your premium in the Christmas Day game, the Dolphins kicker missed a 52-yarder, but then eventually kicked the game ender.
Sure.
Pete Stoyanovich, before he was a Chief and cost the Chiefs the playoff game, won a playoff game for the Dolphins against the Chiefs. He had missed a 57-yarder and then nailed a 58-yarder in like 1989. Was like, that's like 65 today.
I mean,
it was historic, and he won the game It came down to a 58-yard field goal, and he made it. And then in the Lynn Elliott game, actually, the Colts kicker missed two longer field goals. It was very cold, but his kicks were not gimmies, and he did make one, and that was the difference in the game. So, but from 46 yards or less, 29 of 29, they never missed a field goal. And obviously, I think glaring example of this was the Steelers game with Alex Smith in, 2017? The 18 to 16 game?
Yep.
Six of six.
Yep.
If their kicker missed a single field goal, Chris Boswell, he hit from 43, 43, 45, 36, 38, 22. Okay, fine. The last one's a gimme. But, I mean, you missed even one of those, Chiefs win.
Yeah. Yep.
So they hit 29 of 29 from under 46 yards. So I should have known. I had a feeling something was different because I wrote that 2 days before the Colts game,
and
Patrick Mahomes' first career playoff game. And in the Colts game, you may remember.
I remember.
Yes,
I was right going to bring it up
halftime. Right before halftime, the Chiefs are up. They're up pretty comfortably. 24-7. But with a minute 40, the Colts got the ball back. Andrew Luck moved them down the field. They ran out of time. It was, the Chiefs' 5-yard line, 3rd and 1, but 3 seconds were left. The greatest kicker in NFL history,
Adam
Vinatieri, comes out to kick a 23-yarder. No good. If ever, if ever there was a notion, from the very beginning that Patrick Mahomes had already dispelled the curse that fell upon this franchise, it was in that moment. What's ironic is, so he missed that. The next two field goal attempts against the Chiefs in the playoffs were made. And then Kaimi Fairbairn missed one in the 51-31 game against the Texans, which, we all forgot about because when you're coming back from 24-0 to take a lead at halftime, you kind of forget about one field goal attempt.
We were lucky they even kicked a field goal there.
Yeah, but since then, since that kick, that the opposing kickers had made 20 kicks in a row.
Oh, wow.
In the playoffs.
Wow.
Until Tyler Bass. So now, Harrison Butker in that time frame has been outstanding. I mentioned 21 of 35 going into the – it was actually 20 of 34 because Harrison Butker, you may remember, missed his first playoff field goal attempt in the 22-21 Titans game.
That's right.
Mariota game.
Lost by one.
Right? Like, even he was not immune to this, and that is on his resume. And, that's a missed field goal in a game you lose by 1 point, blow an 18-point lead. That's not great. And to the Chiefs' credit, they stuck with him. And since then, he's missed 3 field goals in 30 attempts in the playoffs. So he's a 90% kicker since then. He missed a 33-yarder against the Browns in 2021.
Yeah,
A 42-yard actually in the field goal, and then the Super Bowl last year. Yeah. We're going to forget about that one. Then a 50-yarder in the 13 seconds game as well.
Right, right.
So, but those were at least 50-yard. That was a 50-yard attempt. He's perfect. 11 of 11 from within 33. He's from 47 or less. He is 20 of 22 in his career. So
pretty good.
There's a reason why, even last year when he was struggling all regular season, I didn't want to move on from Harrison Butker. We have experienced the worst luck with kickers, for over a generation. And now we finally have a kicker who has proven he can do it at a 90% clip, more or less. And now it's our chance to win games because the other team is missing kicks. So this last game was really, I think poetic on many levels, both for the Bills' history, but I think also as a testament to how the Chiefs have had this reversal of fortune in so many ways.
They have. We were thinking about old 90s playoff games there, and I was reminded of a Colts quarterback against the Chiefs, Jim Harbaugh. I know you're locked in right now with us. Have you been told what happened, that he just agreed with the Chargers?
No. Is that official?
Chargers hiring Jim Harbaugh as coach.
I picked up my phone and I have a text here.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I thought he would stay at Michigan. Well, back to hating him, I guess.
I'm sure that's a quick switch to flip. Very interesting hire for sure. We'll see how things shake out with the old AFC West rivals. But, you know, they tried three straight coaches that hadn't been a head coach at any level before in their last three hires. And so I guess they're going for a little bit more proven, a little bit more winning coach. So
yeah, just wanted to, you know, I'd like to say, well, you know, winning at the college level is nothing like winning the pros, but he did win. He did win at the pros too.
He's like the fourth winningest by percentage coach in NFL history. I mean, his brief time, his four seasons in the NFL were pretty successful. Let's shift gears again. So RIP to your Michigan head coach, but I'm sure they will. That's a great job, obviously, whoever's, you know.
Yeah, and we talked about, well, you know, not that long ago, we were talking about how I didn't think he would want, why would you leave such a perfect job?
Right.
But I guess the challenge of trying to beat Patrick Mahomes, he just could not resist it. Okay.
Right.
Good luck to you, Jim.
We're talking about a team that has been the preseason AFC West favorites for 10 years in a row.
They have. That's true.
So this is a pretty good job that he's taking here, Randy.
They have.
Clearly. I mean, you know, the Chargers have they're what? Yeah, 10 time defending AFC West preseason champions. So
they're preseason juggernauts.
And they're also like $40 million over the cap, and you know, it'll be fine.
We can get some preemptive revenge by beating his brother on Sunday. So
we could certainly, and he will definitely be in attendance. So we'll get that rivalry going in a big way. Before we move on to that game, I did want to give a quick little shine to a guy that had been getting a ton of crap all year from everybody, Austin and I included.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Yes, exactly, right? It's the big surprise of the day for me, which was MVS. Of all the performances that happened, of all the ways that game would have gone, I didn't see two catches for 60 yards being in on the bingo card, but yet Pat kept trusting him. He hit him, you know, that sideline catch was kind of a bobble, but it was a really nice catch over the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And then the second catch deep down the field where Mahomes stepped up into the pocket and, I mean, a safety bearing down on MVS, which is of all the catches, of all the types of deep catches he could make, contact deep catches are not something that I thought he could ever do again, ever. And yet the safety barrels into him. He holds onto the ball. Just how much did you laugh when MVS comes up with two big catches in a big time game? I mean, how crazy was that?
I definitely laughed. It was absurd. And I won't say I predicted it, sure. But there was a part of me that wasn't surprised, because it's like, this is the mark of a good franchise, that even when, like, you know, a player lets you down all season, that's the kind of player that steps. Like, I've made this comparison before, but coming from the baseball side of things, the Chiefs do remind me a lot of like the St. Louis Cardinals, in the sense that the organization's structure is so solid top to bottom that even if a player is struggling, it's not necessarily a sign that he's a bad player. Like there's a framework within the organization to get that player to improve, to not give up on a player prematurely. And therefore unless that player is not fixable. So in other words, the fact that the Chiefs still were giving MVS snaps all season long was itself a sign that, like, the organization thinks this is fixable. And this is an organization that has earned my trust to believe if they think that, they have a good reason to, right? Whereas the opposite side of that, which is for so long what rooting for the Kansas City Royals was like, if something can go wrong, it will. If somebody, you know, somebody you do trust in a big moment suddenly does something inexplicable. And so the fact that Mahomes was still trying to make it work, it reflects positively on him, but it also on some level reflects positively on MVS. The Chiefs still believe that he had the ability to do what he did.
Yeah.
It's so reminiscent of something I think was even more kind of inexplicable, which is last year in the AFC Championship game, tie game. Chris Jones is just forced, single-handedly forced the Bengals to punt with like 40 seconds left, maybe. you could probably go look back at the box score. And I mean, whatever you think about, you know, MVS right now, you know, is not, or what you thought of him a week ago, is not remotely as fearful as we were of Sky Moore on punt returns, specifically on punt returns. Like last year, well before we had just, the story of Sky Moore was, oh geez, he sucks. The narrative last year was Sky Moore might have a future as a wide receiver, but God in heaven, please do not ever let this man you
Touch
know,
of punt.
touch a punt. I mean, they've been fumbled like three times.
I think it was four, maybe. It was way too much. I can't believe they kept throwing it back
way
out
too
there.
Much.
But
and with 30, I'm looking it up. 39 seconds left.
Yeah,
Drew Chrisman punts 54 yards. Sky Moore gathers it in at the 18 yard line and goes for 29 yards. And suddenly, instead of starting at the 18 yard line, the Chiefs are at midfield.
Yeah,
with one timeout and 30 seconds left. And you know, these are movie script moments, right? When you write the movie, it's the guy who's been struggling all year. Yes. Suddenly coming up big at the last moment. I don't know if you know it's necessary roughness where Scott Bakula hits the track star on the team who has a worse case of drops than MVS and hits him for the game tying touchdown.
Sure,
they would have been game tying, but they went for two. Sorry,
yeah,
I don't want to ruin the game. Ruin the movie if anybody hasn't seen it. But I mean, it's literally I've seen movies where they all movie long they're setting up this narrative. This guy cannot hold on to a football. We're never going to throw it to him.
Yeah,
just for that last moment. And that twice now in two playoff runs, the Chiefs have had a moment just like that. And so yeah, at this point, I mean, he's not in the circle of trust, but I think you know MVS is part of the game plan in large part because again, what the hell do you do with Mecole Hardman at this point?
Right.
It's right. Not the first time he's fumbled in the playoffs against the Bills.
Like, no. Yeah.
Touched He touched the ball twice in the red zone and fumbled both times. Yeah. Shout out to Justin Watson. I mean, very underrated, you know, Justin Watson's again, one of those guys, not a star, not even an average player, but you know, we wouldn't be where we are without his contributions and gathering in the really kind of, pulling that fumble away from the Bills.
Right. They had it for a second. Absolutely.
Enormous. But then, again, and it's not a fumble. Oh, you was hit hard. It's a fumble. It's just the carelessness with which McColl, you know, handles the football to be at the 1 yard line there and to think it's so important on first down. It wasn't fourth in goal on first down to be so careless to try and reach for the end zone. I just don't see how you can run him on those kinds of plays, jet sweeps. Maybe you still use him as a deep threat because you know what? If he fumbles, it's only after he's caught a 40 or 50 yard pass anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Like I mean, the Chiefs, much like MVS, they do seem to feel like they can use him. And so
they
I
don't
actually
have much
wonder,
of a choice though.
They don't. I do wonder if they want to change the narrative with him though. I think it's not going to be on a jet sweep. It's not going to be on one of these backfield plays. I think it has to be downfield.
True. Okay, so let's move on to Baltimore. I feel like the Bills narrative, I mean, no final thoughts on Bills. I feel like that's pretty well in bed now. They're better than the Bills. They'll continue to be better than the Bills. And now we got to look at the presumptive two-time MVP in Lamar Jackson and the number one seed, one of the best teams in recent history, these Baltimore Ravens. For me personally, I felt that the Bills game, I was confident that they could play with them. I didn't know if they'd win, but I certainly felt like they could. This is a much larger mountain to climb this week for the Chiefs. It doesn't mean they can't get there. Obviously, it'd be silly at this point to ever count the Chiefs out of anything. But I assume you're also feeling that this should be a harder game for the Chiefs than last week was.
So the Bills game, you know, not that I'm a gambler, but I know, you know, I know what the odds makers say that the Bills were favored, you know, to win that game.
It was,
I think, a 2.5 point favorite, which 2.5 points is exactly home field advantage, essentially. So, you know, the estimation was these were two dead even teams. The team with the home field will favor. And I did not feel that. I was certain we'd win, but I felt the Chiefs should be favored because I felt their defense, you know, it's not their fault, but they've had so many injuries. Totally. That linebacker core, like, I just felt like I had the one thing I was really confident about in the Bills game was we can score, we can move the ball, and we can score against the Buffalo Bills. I was not sure that they could do the same against our defense. And for the first half, they proved that they could, and, you know, but as the Chiefs do, they figured out what works and what doesn't, and what the Bills were trying to accomplish, shut it down, and the Bills were not able to do that, Chiefs. I mean, we talk about this game, you know, for everything we talked about, the missed field, et cetera, and how close we came to, you know, having the game tied. The reality is the Chiefs easily could have been winning by 14 points.
Certainly.
Right.
Statistically, they were clearly the better team in that game. And, you know, it was the same stupid mistakes. We even mentioned not challenging the forward pass, the forward lateral on what, the third play from scrimmage of the entire
17.
Game.
Yeah.
Which would have made it third and 22, or I don't know if it's a 5 or 10 yard penalty, but third very long.
Yeah.
And I mean, they only got three on that drive, but
I think that would have been a loss of down if you
illegal forward pass.
I think it would have just been fourth down. I think that would have guaranteed punt.
Mm-hmm. On, you know, and it was not just that they got 3 points, but it really set the narrative that they were just going to chew up clock and move the ball. If the Chiefs get that ball right away, having already deferred and getting the ball to start the second half as well, I mean, the whole game has changed. And I mean, I know that it can be frustrating because I think the people in the booth who are on the Chiefs side who are deciding whether or not, you know, to tell Andy to challenge the play, they're looking at the same TV broadcast as we are, is my understanding, which is not ideal, but like, It's the first replay they showed. I'm like, that's a forward pass. Like, it wasn't a question. And I was quite shocked they never threw the flag. So stupid mistake. Like these are mental mistakes. That Mecole Hardman's play. You know, these are not instances where the Chiefs were, you know, getting beat on the field. They were beating themselves like they've been doing all season. Right. And it was a testament to just how much better they were than the Bills that they won the game anyway. But I felt like they were the better team. The Ravens, this is the 17th playoff game of Patrick Mahomes' career. I think this is the first time in 17 games that I, you know, in my heart of hearts, I believe the Kansas City Chiefs are not the better, or at least that the Raven, that their opponent is the better team.
Sure.
There are games where, you know, I thought it was essentially even, maybe the initial game against the Patriots, the Bengals game last year, where I thought, man, this is dead even. There's at least one game where I was foolish to think the Chiefs were better. That was the Super Bowl against the Buccaneers, and not appreciating how much Eric Fisher's, you know, injury was the final domino, and just having no offensive line.
They had won 26 out of 27 games previous to that, so I understand you being confident in that team. That team was a juggernaut.
And that's what it was. And also probably not appreciating how much the impact of you know, Andy Reid's son being involved in a, you know, drunk driving incident. Probably, you know, emotionally, mentally, but did not help anybody.
Right.
But also that the offensive line was just non-existent. So they, you know, in retrospect, but in the moment, I've never gotten to a Chiefs playoff game with Patrick Mahomes thinking we should be the underdog.
Right.
We should be the underdog in this game. We are the underdog. By only three and a half points, only 1 point, you know, different than the Bills game, which to me is ridiculous. I mean, the Ravens, you know, you don't want to get too hung up on one playoff game, but man, CJ Stroud is really good, and yeah, he's not Patrick Mahomes good, and he's a rookie, but the Ravens put him in a blender and the Texans offense in a blender. I'm actually, you know, I'm not sure what scares me more is their defense or Lamar Jackson. You know, I mean, prior to that game, you know, Lamar Jackson's playoff record is spotty. And that's the thing I always come back to is, you know, we know that Patrick Mahomes is at his best in the playoffs. It's funny because, you know, last year he was, you know, hobbled for 95% of it. So it's like, even he was still really good, but like, he's been phenomenal in both playoff games in like cold weather. The only thing that really that keeps what he did against the Bills from being historic is that he only had 23 dropbacks in the game.
Right.
I mean, you know, and he was practically perfect. He had 6 incompletions. He talked about like his two mistakes though, on second and third down, the corner routes to MVS and Kelsey.
Yeah.
But even he acknowledged that. Other than that, I'm not sure he had, you know, a bad throw in any of those games. It was just
best. Four incompletions were throwaways.
So I was about to look that up. How many of them were actually throwaways?
I believe I saw it was 4 throwaways, the 2 overthrows, and everything else complete. That's pretty damn good. That's hard to criticize. That is absurd. Yes.
Well, that is absolutely absurd.
It is, Randy, this Baltimore team though. I don't know if you're a DVOA guy, but we bring that up on the show.
Yeah, no, DVOA is extremely valuable, and it's kind of scary. What are they, third best defense in the 21st century?
they're actually the best defense in the 21st
the
century.
Best.
That might have changed actually, but I did look today at their overall DVOA, and they are the sixth best team in the DVOA era, which goes back to the early 80s. So DVOA thinks this is the sixth best football team in the last 40 years.
How many of the five ahead of them didn't win the Super Bowl?
So that's a good question. One of them
is the 07 Patriots.
You will remember because it was the 2007 Patriots, the 18-1 Patriots, the 2010 Patriots, who I believe also lost. That was the other team that lost to Eli, wasn't it? Or was that 2011?
I believe it was.
Eli was 08 and 11, I thought.
Oh, that could be. But
wait,
was
wait,
it the
11?
No, the 2007
Rodgers won.
So the teams ahead of them are the 2007 and 2010 Patriots. Uh-huh. Then you also have the 1991 Washington team, and you have the 1985. You have the 1985 Bears, and actually, that's only four teams, so they're actually fifth. I did the math on this, so they're actually fifth.
Okay, so the 85 Bears and the 91 Washington. I mean, you could make it. I think 91 Washington is kind of the forgotten, all time great team. Statistically, you make a case they're the best team of all time, and nobody remembers them like the 85 Bears. But okay, those two teams are like two of the best, and then the 07 Patriots, the best, you know, by acclamation, the best team in NFL history to not win a Super Bowl,
of course.
and then you said the 2010 Patriots.
Yeah, it's hard to keep.
That's
the
an interesting
Patriot
one. That's the team that lost its that went 14-2 and then lost its first playoff game to Mark Sanchez.
Oh yeah, sure. That's interesting.
So anything can happen, guys.
Hernandez, two tight end thing going, and
you never know. They lost 28-21. But of course, you know, the thing to hang your head on here is the 07 Patriots, the greatest going into the Super Bowl, the greatest team of all time. They didn't lose to Eli Manning, guys. They lost to Steve Spagnuolo.
Hell
yes, they did.
You know, we talk about playoff Mahomes here, We don't have stats. You know, certainly not the same kind of stats that we do for Mahomes, but playoff Spags.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to hang your head, like, I think we should be the underdogs, but I am so looking forward to winning anyway. Like, I'm so, you know, hyped for this game because going into the playoffs, like, we knew this is not the Chiefs at their best. It's a four game juggernaut. Win the first two. Like, I really broke this up into first two games. We don't have to see the 49ers or the Ravens. Those games are winnable. And we should win them. And if we do, we do no worse than what we've done in the past, which is get to the AFC Championship game.
Right. Right.
Everything from this point is gravy. Like, of course, I'll be disappointed if they lose. But,
season's gone, though, I mean, that's pretty remarkable that they made it back here.
My rule in general is if you make it to the conference championship or the LCS if you get to the Final Four of your sport, you have not had a fail. You've had a good season. You cannot call that a failure when you get that far.
Unless there are only four teams in your sport. But yes.
in the major sports, yes. And certainly when you've done it 5 years in a row, now it's six, and you're only 2 years, two behind what seems to be just an absolutely impregnable record of eight.
Right.
We got to six. I'm very, very happy with where we are now. Obviously, you know, if we get spanked in this game, then it's going to, you know,
it'll stink.
Force a lot of reflection also on like, what do we have to do to get better? And if we lose in excruciating fashion, then there'll always be that what if. So yes, there's, I'm not saying I'm going to feel great if we lose by any means.
Honestly,
but
if we get spanked in this game, we're going to join the Lions and the Niners on the other side of teams that got spanked by the Ravens this year. I mean, their big game performance this year has been unbelievable.
Outrageous.
They're very good.
A good team. They lock it.
And I mean, it's a cliche to say this, but look, this is going to come down to quarterbacks versus defensive coordinators, right?
Because
Lamar Jackson, you know, is a unique, you know, he's not just, you know, about to win his second MVP, but he's just unlike anybody in the sport. I mean, him and Josh Allen, the numbers are similar, but their styles are very different. But Lamar has become a better, quarterback than he was 4 years ago when they got upset in the first round.
Yeah.
I still think that like he has not, I like the fact that the Chiefs and Ravens have not played this year. Like it's a nice quirk of the schedule because
sure
it adds to the aura of mystery here. I think that we don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
And, you know, if the Chiefs can keep this game reasonably close, you know, going into the half, I just, you know, the second half adjustments that we're going to see from Spags, my hope is, you know, if there's a pathway to winning here, it's that he comes up with something that Lamar is not expecting and, you know, stymies them in the second half. But on the other side, of course, Mike McDonald is probably the hottest coordinator, offensive or defensive, in the
sport. And Mahomes hasn't seen him.
And Mahomes hasn't seen him, but he hasn't seen Mahomes.
That's true.
Right?
And that's, it's so fascinating because then on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, Spags has really dominated Lamar, but Lamar has a new offense. He's not under Greg Roman anymore. You know, they have Todd Monken calling plays now. And so really, like, all of the matchups here are fresh. They're new. And I feel like on some level, no disrespect to Mike McDonald and Todd Monken and Jim, John, damn it. This is going to be so confusing.
The Johnsons? Back in,
which, no.
The
Harbaugh.
Oh,
I know it should not be difficult for me.
John
but in any
is
case,
there. Jim is the Charger. Yeah.
John Harbaugh, no disrespect to any of those coaches. They're all very good, and what they've accomplished this year is incredible. But in a game where you have fresh coaching matchups all the way around and really on both sides of the ball, you know, players interacting against coordinators that they have not faced before, you got to feel like that favors the Chiefs and Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo and Patrick Mahomes.
I certainly want to believe that. Yes. And again, we know that even in the playoffs against playoff defenses, against, you know, for obviously hot defensive coordinators. I mean, let's not forget what the Eagles, you know, that they'd reinvented defense last year.
Yeah.
And Patrick put up 38 against them. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, we know this is the thing that if you're not a Chiefs fan and you just think, okay, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the sport, you don't fully appreciate is that he is at his peak. He's not just like the greatest player in the NFL today. He might be the greatest NFL player of all time. And he's up there with the greatest performers in any team sport in American history. I mean, I was comparing him in the Ringer to Michael Jordan 3 years ago. And I think that holds up because in the playoffs against the hardest competition, he's never been overwhelmed. And he usually, you know, overwhelms the opponents who are, you know, by definition are the best in the sport and, you know, have reason to think that, like we just said, well, Patrick Mahomes has never faced us. Yes, you have not faced him.
Right.
You know, there's right. what was the movie? There's a famous line where,
You're thinking of Watchmen, and you're thinking of
Rorschach
when he's in the prison, and he says, "I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me."
Thank you. Yeah. You're
a huge Watchmen guy.
You know, you're
as soon as you,
it's
soon
so
as
famous
you started
that
you're
about
there,
Watchmen.
Like,
I know that quote, and that's what it is. Patrick Mahomes, he's not in there with you. You are in the arena with him.
Uh huh.
He is the one who knocks.
He is.
He's always been the one who knocks. And this game is, it's the hardest, maybe the hardest challenge he's had to face yet. But you know what? It is absolutely the hardest challenge that Mike McDonald has had to face.
Yes.
And it would do an incredible amount for his legacy. At some level, you start to worry he's going to be like, Alexander in Die Hard, who wept because there were no more worlds to conquer. Like, you worry that Patrick Mahomes is going to run out of, you know, of hills to conquer, run out of ways to elevate his legacy more than it already is, right? That's so hard to do. This game, though, I really think is a game that could elevate his already titanic legacy.
Isn't that
if he goes out there and puts up 30 or 35 against this Ravens defense, shut it down, boys. Should never pick against this man again for as long as he
if he beats the fifth best team in the DVOA era, waiting on the other side, assuming they get past the Lions, is the ninth best team of the DVOA era, the 2023 49ers. So if he rolls through the Ravens Titans and 49ers, I don't think there's anything like that ever in the history of the sport. I
mean, it would certainly rank up there to go, you know, Dolphins, Bills, Ravens, Niners would have to rank among the most difficult. But just the fact that you're playing four games instead of three, right? But like, it would definitely involve a lot of really smart stat guys running a lot of numbers to see is this the most impressive playoff, you know, juggernaut that you've come out at the top of.
Sure. In NFL you probably history. Could use DVOA pretty easily on that, right? Like, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty
well. When you're jumping by DVOA, it's going to be a blowout. I mean, you've got two of the 10 ninth. Best in yeah, the same bowl
sure.
season.
Sure.
That's unheard of.
Before we get you out of here, I want to ask you real quick about Lamar and how you kind of look at he's had kind of an interesting, very interesting path so far. He, of course, won the unanimous MVP in 19. He struggled in the playoffs. He's back to kind of being this world beater. He's going to win his second MVP. Now, after his second playoff win last week, he has a 2-3 playoff record. Legacy wise, is the pressure on A, Lamar to go up against this unbeatable Titan that is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and beat them? Or do you think that the Chiefs, if they are legacy watching, feel like we could birth a legacy here if we let this guy beat us and go win a Super Bowl? It's up to us to keep him down a notch and vault ourselves over the top. Like, just, you know, where do you see kind of Lamar in his place right now among the greats?
I think this game has to mean more for Lamar, because if he loses, then he goes, I mean, he's in the Josh Allen bucket if the guy is just not good enough to even get to the Super Bowl, let alone win it. You know, he said he's 2-3 in the playoffs. He loses 2-4. Yeah. Like, you can't claim to be, you know, anywhere near Mount Rushmore if you're 2-4 in the playoffs. If he wins, well, I mean, Joe Burrow won, right? First off, he has to go out and beat the Niners, which is, you know, or the Lions. But if they play the Niners, it's not a gimme. They did it. It's the most, probably the most impressive game any team has played this season, where they beat them in the regular season.
Right. Do it again, though.
You know, exactly. They're going to do it again. If he doesn't, then, you know, it's all for the question is still there. I mean, the sport is brutal in that way. People's perceptions are brutal. Either you win it all or you don't. But if he does, guess what? Patrick still has two. I think you would have to do it multiple times. Like, if this is their first meeting. So yes, he would be only the second quarterback in the NFL after Tom Brady to have a winning record against Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs.
Sure.
So yes, there's that. But one game does not, is not a trend. Two, if he did it, if Lamar beats Mahomes in this game, then the next time they meet, if they meet again next year, then I think you were talking about a big deal. I mean, just like the second game against the Bengals was, I think, much more on the line than the first.
It was.
You know, the first we had to prove was a fluke. And if we had lost that game, Bengals fans are insufferable anyway, but like
another
level. So, but I think for now, no, this game is about Lamar. He's got home field. Like, you know, he's got everything lined up. He got the number one seed. He had the week of rest. He has, home field advantage. And his team is pretty much at full strength. He's obviously got this incredible defense behind him, too. Like, you know, I will say, of course, you know, the Ravens have incredible defense. They gave up, I think, 14 points less, like less than 1 point per game, less than the Chiefs. And if you take out, points scored on the offense giving up, fumbles for touchdowns and things, I might even be closer. Like, the Chiefs' defense, I think, is still underrated, certainly in the context of this matchup. Everyone's talking about the all-world defense and this hot coordinator. Well, we have a defense 99% as good with a coordinator who's not hot new, but has proven in the playoffs that he can come up with ways to stymie even the best offenses that ever literally ever existed. So
yeah, the greatest offense of all time in NFL history.
Yeah. So I was looking forward to last week's game, but oh my God, this game. I mean, I was hoping we'd play the Texans at home. That'd be great. I wanted the Arrowhead Invitational, of course.
Sure.
Round 6. Yeah. But this game, this is, we talk about the most anticipated games, you know, Chiefs, you know, that played in this whole time. Obviously the first Super Bowl, I think the second Super Bowl, but really the Bengals game. Like, it's short of the Super Bowl, the Bengals game is clear. The second Bengals game was clearly the most anticipated. And I think it would still be number one, because we'd only won one Super Bowl at that point. We had obviously lost to them. And we hated them because we had lost to them before. But this one, I mean, obviously, you know, the first, you know, the one against the Patriots, it was incredible. We're hosting an AFC championship game, like our first AFC championship game. It was so new. There was a little bit of that, right? Like just like whatever happens. Oh my God, this guy's for real. We have Patrick Mahomes. This is, you know, it was the way it ended that made us like even more angry. But then we come back to next year and finish it. And if we had played the Ravens that year, yeah, it really was 14-15 Royal style. But the next year, if we had played the Ravens, who were the number one seed, I think it would have been more anticipated. Playing the Titans, it was almost like, my God, the only anticipation was if we blow this.
Yes.
You know, we got this gift. We're playing the Titans at home. If we blow this because Derek freaking Henry, then like we have no one to blame but ourselves, and it'll be a huge missed opportunity. So I don't feel like that was as anticipated. And then you win one, then the Bills AFC Championship. Again, I you know, it's an AFC Championship. It's important, but I don't feel like there was that much pressure on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, we may have taken our eye off the ball with the Bengals the first time.
Right.
Clearly the team did at halftime. But then last year,
lead, looking forward a little bit, that makes total sense. Yeah.
And then last year was the most anticipated. I would put the second beyond that, behind that, because the Ravens team are just on paper. They are just better. Like you said, it's one of the best teams on paper in NFL history. But this is also, you're two games away from winning that third title, and three is a dynasty and it's over. Like the dynasty, well, you know, hopefully when we talk next week, it's all going to be about dynasty status, and we're one game away.
Right.
But you got to win. You're still two games away right now. So let's you know, just focus on this game. Hopefully we'll have some, you know, guys healthy. We'll see if Joe Tooney's out there. Oh, I had another good feeling about the game the morning of. I was on the slopes in Vail, and again, I had my Patrick Mahomes jersey on, and a ski instructor, you know, just kind of called out, hey, you're ready for the game or whatever. You know, it's kind of obvious I'm rooting for the Chiefs. But then he comes over and he's like, oh yeah, you're like, you know, I have a buddy, his son was a lineman at Illinois, and he got a call from Andy Reid in the middle of the draft. And you know, it's like Andy's like, you want to block for Patrick Mahomes? And I look at him like, wait, is your buddy's son Nick Allegretti?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, Nick.
What?
I'm like, okay. I'm like, that was a pretty good sign. This of all things, yes, the random, like,
that's crazy.
He's a Chicago kid. I had a friend who texted me the day of the draft and is like, who's Nick Allegretti? I'm like, the Chiefs just drafted him in the fifth round. He's like, yeah, his whole family's at this restaurant here and celebrating. Of course, I didn't expect Nick Allegretti to actually have to play a quarter of the snaps because Joe Tooney
played well.
But still, it was a good sign, and he played well. He had a couple of really good plays. But obviously, we need Joe Tooney. Willie Gay looks like he'll probably play. That I think is the most
practiced important. In full, and he said I'm playing on Sunday on
and then, that's the one, because man, we need, you know, we not having him to spy on Allen was a problem, and
yes it was.
We need a spy for Lamar, so but if he's able to play, the team is in relatively good health, and again, Patrick Mahomes has two working legs this year, so like sky's the limit.
Good luck.
But man, this game is going to be this is going to be a fun one, I think.
Well, Rainey, as always, we super appreciate your time. Episode 10 was just as good as the last 9. Can't wait to talk to you next week, hopefully in celebration. Or, I mean, even at this point, putting to bed the 2023 Chiefs is not going to be as rough of a situation as I thought we were going to face even a couple weeks ago. I mean, they've gone out. They turned the playoffs
on Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day, I didn't even think I'd ever do this podcast again, honestly. So it's been a fun ride. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.